the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another Wednesday episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBP Media Network. My name is Joey. I'm here with my co-host and conciliary, Len, in parts well-known by now.
Still buddy, unknown, please.
Yeah, what's going on in the basement over there? How's your basement doing? My basement looking pretty good today, feeling pretty good. The right temperature on this warm Southern Ontario day.
It's chilly today, not in my basement, but outside. I was commenting with one of my neighbors. I like it in the 30s. I rather enjoy it in that temperature. So the basement looks fine. It looks the same as always. It's home. It's where I work. It's where I do most of my stuff. So yeah, including recording the show. Joey, how are things over there with you?
Outstanding, brother. Very good. We got a very special guest tonight. Jaime Garcia is joining us. El Salvador enthusiast. Me and him are going to talk about all the sorts of FUD and other nonsense going on with El Salvador. I got questions. I think it's going to be a lot of two-on-one tonight, Len. I got my A game ready here. Before we start, though, we got two sponsors. One of them, ShakePay, channel sponsor for a long time. Best place for Canadians to buy and never sell their Bitcoin. They got four things going on, Len. In addition to having a great app, easy to use, all that great stuff, they got four things going on. Number one, Shaking Sats. If you use our promo code CharlieBetaPeter, CBP, to sign up, you, anonymous listener or viewer, can get sats sent to your phone every day. Not shats sent to your
you don't
phone,
want
but
that.
Sats. Absolutely not. Sats sent to your phone every day. On day 365 of consecutive shaking, the number of sats you get is 1,000. Every day after that, as long as you don't forget to wake and shake, you get 1,000 sats. Not bad. Second, Len, they got the Shake Squads. Brand new. You and four friends get together, spend off of your CAD balance, and every time you spend or someone on your team spends, everyone on the team gets 42 sats. Not bad. So I've been raking in like 200 sats a day here. I never even use my car because I don't leave my house. I'm actually going to go use it tonight and buy some milk at the Shoppers Drug Mart in my neighborhood. So sorry about that for my team members. I'll try and do my part this week. Third, Len, they got the Shake Paid. You can spend off your CAD balance and have your entire purchase comped in Satoshis. We used to say this thing was ending every month because that's what I thought. And it never seems to end. We still get messages in the chat here during the flagship and messages.
It's not transitory.
It's not transitory. It's also not 0%, like KJP says, cringe Jean-Pierre, which is a great nickname given to us by Romel. Finally, Len, the last thing, sats back. So if you spend off your CAD balance, first 5,000 you spend, you get 2% back. And then after that, it's 1% in perpetuity. You can't beat that, especially with the price going up. You're going to feel good about the sats you stack that 17K while the price creeps up, as you see behind me on 24. So great sponsor. We love ShakePay. We think you'll love them too. Give them a shot. And we're glad they're part of the channel. What else we got going on, then? We got a second sponsor here, of course.
Yeah, we have Ledin, where you could earn some extra Bitcoin by simply parking your Bitcoin on their platform and also USDC. So open up an account with our referral code. And if you put 150,000 Satoshis or more on their platform, or 75 USDC or more on their platform, keep it on there for 15 consecutive days, and Ledin will reward you with 10 USDC. And if you need money and you'll have a large stack of Bitcoin, you don't want to sell it because who does? Ledin is there to help you out. You can borrow against your Bitcoin with a 50% loan to value, and you're good to go with the money. You can do whatever you need to do. And if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, and we all do, I believe, you could use the B2X option where you could double up your Bitcoin stack, time the market correctly, pull out when the price goes up, and now you have a little bit more Bitcoin simply by timing the market and using Ledin's B2X feature. The last thing they have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. These are an industry first. The price of homes have gone down quite a bit, so you may be able to take advantage while the homes are cheap. But this Bitcoin-backed mortgage situation is not available everywhere. So check the website, Ledin's website, to see what jurisdictions it's being offered in. But also look at their website to see what are the savings and borrowing rates, because those change on a month-to-month basis.
They're crushing. Len, what is the maximum number of sats you could get using the ShakePay card and a Bitcoin-backed mortgage from Ledin? You pay the mortgage with your card or something, or like you contribute to someone else's mortgage on the Shake Squad. I don't know exactly what the maximum is, but it's got to be pretty fucking high, right?
We got to get the meeting of the minds. We have to get somebody from Shake Pan Ledin to come on. We can figure out what the magic number is.
If only there was two guys with ponytails working for those companies who have been on the show before, we could probably talk to them about that. Maybe a story for another time. Right
with
now,
Italian heritage, guys, too. Each
I know. Have it. The four Italians. Right now, we got a guy who's not Italian. His name gives it away. Jaime Garcia is here. He's from El Salvador, though he's not in El Salvador. My friend, first of all, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming back. You've been a great friend to the show. Where are you? And tell us a bit about the background here that you're, I think, debuting a podcast, right?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, yes, I'm in sunny Regina, Saskatchewan, home of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And, the Royal Canadian Mountain Police, I guess. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's this pretty quiet small town. I think I'm probably like the only Maxi here. I mean, there's a lot of other crypto enthusiasts here, and I'm nice to them just because it's a small community, but definitely it's a lonely slag around here, so... But no, I mean, I'm also from El Salvador, and I go down to El Salvador periodically to visit family and friends and just chill out and take refuge from the Saskatchewan winters. So right now, I'm in my family's art room. So there's a lot of painting around me. It's quite messy, but it's probably one of the only quiet places, although one of the kids might barge in here looking for something, but yeah, no, this is kind of what the setting is. My daughter plays soccer, so she's got a couple of jerseys, El Salvador jersey, and Canadian soccer team women's national soccer team jersey, Jordan Heidema's number 9 jersey. So yeah, so that's kind of what's going on. They play the drums. We have a very artistic family here, and I mean we're not experts at art or music, but you know they dive into it. So it's fun. It's all for fun.
It looks.
I'm
great.
An expert. I could draw a mean stick figure.
No, come on.
Have you ever seen my stick figures? They are magnificent.
I saw the Microsoft Paint pair of tits that you were commenting on today, okay, talking about keeping you engaged. They may keep you engaged, but they're going to cause you to get divorced first, okay? I promise you that.
Who is that guy that did it? The Ghost of Corleone, I think, right?
Ghost of Tony Corleone, Paul Corleone, I think it's, or something like that.
What a picture. Microsoft Paint.
I gotta get Jaime to talk to me about accent walls. That's a very strong accent wall I see there with the leopard print or cheetah print.
The zebra print, yeah. You know, like I think this is kind of like the experimental room. This is kind of like test net for the house. So you know, I stay for the most part, I stay out of here. This is not my domain here. I mean, I choose to be artistic in different ways, but yeah, the girls and my wife come in here to find some refuge, and I think it's just like I think it's just wallpaper, and and there is a whiteboard. I when we were working remotely, I did come here sometimes to work, and the whiteboard I put up because it just, you know, like I'm a very visual type of person too. Like I like to see, okay, I gotta do this today, I gotta do this tomorrow, these projects are over here, and I would just draw them out there, but now it's mostly stick figures that go up there, Len.
That's my expertise.
It's all good. Jaime, you mentioned your artistic and showing your artistic side in other ways. You've been, you know, taking some creative, liberties is probably the wrong word, but you've been very engaged in a few maybe heated Twitter discussions with some big time Bitcoiners and Bitcoin adjacent folks over the last while, which I'm sure we'll get into. But let's start with the stuff that we brought you here for, the stuff that you're becoming known for, I think, on Twitter. The El Salvador connection, the El Salvador update. So, Len, I don't know if you have a particular bit of FUD you want to begin with. If you do, now's the time. Otherwise, my suggestion would be to pass to Jaime and see what is he hearing the most or defending, I guess, the most these days. Because there's a lot, man. There's a lot of people who are not too keen on stuff going on in El Salvador at the moment. And I, to be honest with you, I don't know enough about it to say one way or the other what's going on, which is why we got you here, Jaime. So why don't you go ahead and maybe give us something that's on your mind.
So Joey, I first, before we get into all of it, I noticed your neck, man. You've been hitting the weights, haven't you? Like, your neck is considerably thicker than last time.
You know, last time I was in a cast or in a boot, yeah. So I wasn't working out as much. But yeah, I have been. I've been in the gym. I'm in there every morning, buddy. 5:30. I'm shit posting and lifting weights. Yeah. So yeah.
I can tell. I'm eating the steak and the Bitcoiner diet, staying away from seed oils. There you go.
Got the full.
I've been
full
trying
fat,
to get him on
full fat milk.
I've been trying to get him on Wagyu beef, but he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't. Yeah. I'm trying hard.
I was in Japan and I had some legit Wagyu beef from Hokkaido, and it's delicious. But you know what? They don't give you much. It's like one of those things where, like, the less you have, the more you appreciate it. And one of those things. So, but yeah, no, good job, man. I think that, you know, not simping or anything, but like, especially when you're putting in the work, yeah, it's good to get recognized, right?
I appreciate that. I appreciate that big time, man. You know, you were one of the people who talked to us after the show about my injury, and definitely means a lot, dude. And there's a lot of people, you know, who've said similar stuff. I appreciate it very much. Absolutely.
I used to be a former athlete, so I know that it's it's
weren't we all, right? Weren't we all?
So, okay. So, all right. So, and stop me at any point, because yeah, you'll probably get. It'll trigger your memory about things you've heard and, you know, things you want me to address. But so we're about to approach the 1 year mark when El Salvador made Bitcoin legal tender, right? So lots of people becoming impatient as to, hey, you know, it's not going as planned. You know, things didn't develop as maybe everybody had hoped for. And and what's interesting about it all is that I can understand when some of these things come from folks that are normally detractors, but I'm hearing this from a lot of Bitcoiners, right? And people who at one point maybe were kind of promoters of what was of the El Salvador project, right? And so then but there's the country itself, there's a lot going on. And since we last talked, there's two major developments that have gone on. The first one is that the country's trying to clean up its gang problem. This is not an easy thing to do. Whoever was going to do it was probably going to take some heat for it from various directions, mainly the gangs and organized crime and whatnot, but definitely some of the citizens, some of the human rights organizations, probably internationally, business, and so on, right? And so this is exactly what has happened. Bukele has decided that now it's time to take care of the problem, a problem that has been there for over 30 years, probably longer, but, you know, really the problem intensified in 94 when the Bill Clinton administration at that time, once El Salvador signed the peace agreements where the leftist guerrillas became an official political party and no longer were a military force. Once those peace agreements were signed, the U.S. basically deported a bunch of Salvadorans and said, well, like, you really don't need to be here. Your country's at peace. You're here illegally. Go and take your children with you. A lot of these children were actually American born. They're American born Salvadorians, I guess. But what happened was that, you know, some years back, probably a couple decades back, when the first waves of Salvadorian immigrants started going into the US, East LA was a preferred destination, right? And, you know, full disclosure, I'm a Dodgers fan. So, and it comes from that. It comes from having a large Salvadoran population settle in Los Angeles. Well, I mean, East LA was in South Central LA and just, you know, that whole area of Los Angeles has historically had a lot of gang problems. And Salvadorans were kind of getting picked on, and they decided to sort of form a gang. And MS-13. And then their main rival gang was a Mexican gang, Barrio 18. And so, you know, at one point it was Mexicans against Salvadorians, but at some point it really didn't matter. It was two gangs against each other, because both gangs now, when the Clinton administration exported this problem, ended up in El Salvador. And they took their East LA warfare into El Salvador, a country who had just gone through a civil war, who basically put a whole bunch of people out of jobs because their job was basically to be in the military and fight a war, and didn't have a transition back to any work for them or any ways to earn a living. They didn't have a very orderly kind of like turn in your guns kind of like process, you know, because and so there's a lot of like military grade weapons in the hands of you know, just people. They had grenades, landmines, you know, AK-47s, M-16s, and so, I mean, when there's no jobs, there's a lot of weapons. And then there's this new phenomenon being imported from LA, which is basically to fight a gang war and continue that gang warfare from LA and El Salvador. You know, you could sort of put two and two together and see that it wasn't a very good recipe. It was really a recipe for disaster. And so this is kind of how, you know, this problem came to be, right? And it got even worse and worse, right? And corrupt government after corrupt government let things slide, let the problem get worse, and to the point where they started to deal with the gangs and cut deals. It's like, you know, keep the deaths to a minimum. Like, let's negotiate truces and ceasefires and basically keep homicides low, and basically that became like a very lucrative stream of revenue for the gangs. Is that okay? If we keep deaths low, then, you know, there's steady revenue coming in, and every once in a while these deals would fall apart, and a new deal would get brokered. You know, various politicians were involved, even the Catholic Church was kind of involved. There was journalists involved, kind of being the go-betweens or the moderators to these deals, all very well documented. You know, there's even footage of you know, they call them maletines negros, which is like black suitcases or black bags, right, full of cash that not only did you know, some corrupt politicians get these black suitcases, but also some of the gang leadership, right? So, and the other thing is that that, you know, the gangs have no particular mission, to so to speak. You know, it's basically a mission of survival, right? You know, we and the failure of just the government not being able to provide jobs and opportunities for these young men and women led them to a life where And it's all about incentives. And when we talk about Bitcoin, it's all about incentives, right? The incentive to belong to a gang and live a life of crime was more enticing than the life of hard work and, you know, living a dignified life. And I mean, why? You know, I could go earn minimum wage, take the bus every day, get up, do the right thing, get home and get the shakedown, okay? Or I could just sleep till noon, get up, have a gun, have the protection of the gang, go do the shakedown of people who don't have the ability to protect themselves or fight back, and I get the money. So it's all about incentives, right? When there's no incentives to do the right thing or to the, you know, to provide value for society, for community, for your family, then you know, people do the wrong thing. And so the government, corrupt government after corrupt government, enabled that, right? Let's also keep in mind that these folks are not nice people. They're really, really not nice people, and they did some horrible things. I won't go into my personal stories about how my own family has kind of suffered from that, but I know that many, many Salvadorians, like if you were to take, like, you know, 10 Salvadorians, 8 of them have an incident, and the 2 that don't have an incident, well, they have a friend or they know somebody who has. And so what Bukele did, it was what it's called the state of exception, and it suspends individual freedoms for people. Now that sounds quite alarming, okay? Because as Bitcoiners, you know, some of us are very pro-freedom. What that does, though, is it allows the government to arrest people and basically put them in jail. And because there's a backlog of just cases, it allows the judicial system to process people. Now, there's this concept called habeas corpus, which means that you can't be held, you know, without cause. And habeas corpus in El Salvador, I believe, is 72 hours. If in 72 hours you can't be processed and charged with something and have proof, then you have to be let go. And so it's a good concept to have, because, like, Len, if you get arrested for some reason and you know, whoever, if the government's arresting you and you have the right to know why you're being arrested. And if they can't provide that, they have to let you go. But the problem is that they have such backlog, they have a lot of bad people, that this became catch and release. And then what gang members were doing is trying to find retribution, because, you know, they probably had a pretty good idea of who accused them of whatever crime and whatnot. So the stripping of individual rights, of course, it's alarming, because it allows the government to essentially do what may seem like arbitrary detainments, right? And they don't have to provide that a cause until 72 hours, but because of this suspension, that 72 hours becomes 15 days. Now, in 15 days, they can process you. You are in front of a judge, they charge you, and then you can go to prison on a more definite, you know, on a sentence or whatever, right? But why Bukele had to do this is because since he got in, homicides were going down, and all of a sudden there was a spike. And I'm not sure exactly what caused this. I mean, people on the ground who I've talked to have a lot of theories, and I mean, there's a big long story about that piece, which I won't go into, but needless to say, the gang members wanted more money, and you know, they basically said, okay, like, give us more money, or, you know, we continue to kill people. There was 80 some people that got killed in a span of 2 days. I think it was 83. Okay, and so some of them at random. And they were trying to send a message. And Bukele was not in a mood to play chicken. And Bukele had been actually building the capacity to deal with this for about 2.5 years. In fact, and I don't know if you guys have seen reports that he went to the assembly with the military, and you know, he, you know, there's pictures of him storming in there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the headlines were like Bukele dictator or whatever.
Right.
And the reason why he went in there was because he had proposed to the assembly, which at that time he didn't have any allies. Since then, his party actually gained a supermajority. So when he went in there, he basically went, he convened a special session to deal with the matter of approving the security budget so that he could build, you know, like the means to deal with the gang problem. They didn't approve that budget, and nobody there, only few people, kind of like congressmen and women, attended that special session, yeah. Which by law, by the way, they're supposed to attend when the president convenes special sessions. And so he went with the army for a few reasons. The first one was because, in fact, the people, Salvadorans, were really mad, and there was threats that they were going to storm the assembly and basically create an insurrection against the legislative assembly. So Bukele said that he was there with the army to provide security for the assembly. Some people don't believe him, but you know, that's kind of what the story is from the government. The other reason was that there was a few different people in the leadership of those parties at that time, they had basically given Bukele a threat. They said, "Look, don't forget who the real owners of the country are." And if you forget, just know that the military is allied with us and not you. So it was a symbolic gesture to come with the military and show them, look, I'm the commander in chief. These people do not pay attention to you. They obey my orders. So that was the second one, right? The third reason is that this man is under constant threats of assassination. I mean, you know, didn't want to say it for a long time, but you have to know that one of the reasons why he didn't go to Miami, you know, is that there's some malarkey going on. What's happening in El Salvador is upsetting a lot of people. So then he was just basically safeguarding himself. But that whole incident went down and basically framed him as a dictator. Okay, and so fast forward to today, you know, once he got his supermajority, he asked for the budget to increase the capacity of the army, policing, equip them appropriately. Sometimes the gangs had actually better equipment and better guns, more ammunition than the local police. So he did all of that. And then when the streak of murders in March came in, he said, "I'm not playing games. State of exception. And we're going to suspend people's rights. And this might not sit well with a lot of the population. But you know what? If you're not doing anything, you don't have to worry about it. In fact, you know, there's several concerts, soccer games. Like, they just had the civic festivals and fairs all throughout August, and everybody was free to do whatever they wanted if they were doing peacefully and with good intention. But if you're a criminal, of course, this is an uncomfortable time. Where it all sort of all of this collided is that people started to complain that there was no freedoms in El Salvador. It's an oppressive state. It's Bukele is like the worst person in the world. He's, you know, I mean, if you could compare him to the pantheon of villains, that he'd be in there, according to these folks, right? So who are these folks? Well, a lot of these folks are media.
Name them.
El Faro, which is a local digital newspaper owned by, the opposition that dislikes Bukele. The mainstream media. Your classic usual suspects, right? But I guess more importantly, things like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, which, you know, in the past I've had respect for, but I think that I'm kind of realizing that they're just like an accessory for the fiat system, essentially. And then Human Rights Foundation, which is who Alex Gladstein works for. I know that Alex is not here, so I'm not gonna say too much about that, because I really like people to have a chance. But him and I had disagreements about various things, and it led me to, just like him, point out a number of people, including some hardcore Maxis. Again, I'm not going to name them, but you guys all know who they are. And if you look through my timeline, you'll know who I fought with and whatever, right? Just repeat and parrot all of the misinformation and misguided talking points from people who are either deceiving on purpose or know nothing about Salvadoran law. One of the common things is that Bukele stacked the judiciary. Completely untrue. Bukele has no ability to do that. In fact, only the assembly can do that. The assembly chose to do that. The assembly got a supermajority, which allows them to do that. A supermajority is basically 3/4 of the vote in the assembly. They have the purview to actually conduct such things if they deem it appropriate. The judiciary, the Supreme Court, was stacked with political appointees and corrupt judges. The same judges who...
Prior to the stacking you're talking about.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
These judges were part of the problem, because when key criminals came through the system, they just let them go. You know, they didn't deal with them. A lot of them were part of the whole deal to broker them. Peace or ceasefires or whatever, right? So you have to clean it up, and sometimes it's messy. Sometimes it's not ideal. Sometimes the optics are bad. But what was not is it was not illegal. Now, I say that my father and I used to watch boxing and play chess on weekend nights. And as of late, we've been studying the Salvadoran constitution, because we were kind of curious. We were alarmed too. It's like, hey, no, like, I mean, really? Like, is this for real? And it's legal. Not only that, I've consulted with a constitutional expert. Actually, a friend of mine is working on a documentary, and we reached out to a constitutional expert from El Salvador. This gentleman was actually one of the authors of the current constitution. He asserts, and this is no Bukele supporter, by the way. This is person who was in opposite parties, and was a legal advisor and a constitutional advisor to three different parties. He said that there's nothing wrong. There's nothing illegal. There's nothing untowards. Does it look bad? Yeah, because that usually doesn't happen. But when you have a supermajority, you can do that. Now, keep in mind that these folks in the assembly and Bukele got elected on the platform that they would clean up corruption. Now think about this. I run on that campaign and I don't do anything about it. Right? Yeah. Like that's your agenda. That's your mandate.
Yeah, your head will roll.
Right. And that's the very first thing that they did, because if they don't do that, they can't do everything else they need to do. And so... So then, you know, I had people calling me a statist or whatever, you know, fine, I don't care. Like, look, I mean, there's, you know, like I pride myself in being like a free and independent person. I don't belong to any parties right now, either in Canada or in El Salvador. I have in the past, but not right now. And so... I will change my vote. I will change the way I think. I will change my recommendations if I see something. But right now, I don't see any of that. Does it look bad? Yeah, okay. But let's look deeper and let's understand what the law says. And what were the motives? Okay, yeah. So, you know, some people said it's like, well, Bukele was just like a WEF puppet that was just basically following COVID this and that. Okay, no, I mean, you know, I concur. I align with a lot of what you're saying, but the motives don't actually count when it comes to whether something is legal or not. You know, it may count towards what we think about it and you know, but motives are motives. Action is what counts, and that action was legal. He got rid of, or and that's the I just made the mistake. I said he, the assembly got rid of. I'm sure he was lying. I'm sure they had a meeting about it, right? You know, but they got rid of the corrupt judges. They appointed new ones. Now there's another point too here where you know we began fighting, and it was about the re-election. The re-election. So there is, and I'll just say this much, the Constitution, in my criteria, and like from my perspective, is badly written, okay? Because it leaves the ability for interpretation. And depending on who the Supreme Court is at the time, and actually they have like this subcommittee which is called Sala de lo Constitucional, which is basically like a board or like a subcommittee that just deal with constitutional matters, right? So their ruling was that in fact Bukele could get reelected. And this is a funny story, because what happened was that according to the Constitution, anybody who promotes the re-election of the current president is violating the law, and there's a penalty to pay for it. And the penalty to pay for it is the stripping of their their citizenship rights.
Who's now, when you say no one's allowed, you mean like no citizen or no who?
Yeah, citizens, but that's the other thing. It's ambiguous. So it's not like, so like Joey, if you went down there and you were like pro Kelly, you know, like it's kind of like ambiguous. They would have to make an interpretation if somebody decided to file a complaint against you. But because you're not a citizen, like they can't strip you of your rights. And actually, like there's actually no provision for what should even happen to you. You know, so it's, and like I said, to me, it's badly written, because, you know, and so so what happened was, like, yeah, there was a local woman who was promoting Bukele to get reelected. The opposition said, well, that's not right, and that's violating the Constitution. So they filed a complaint. And so matters that before the Supreme Court that deal with the stripping of a citizen's rights are basically like a higher priority, because you can't have people like that in limbo, because and so they looked at that, and they looked at it. I mean, it's like a 21-page ruling. I read it. Part of it is like, you know, explaining, you know, that they looked at other cases, they looked at the language, they took out the dictionary, they looked at, you know, this and that and the other. And they basically said that, like, there is, and I believe it's Article 152 or 182, I can't remember right now. But in that article, it basically outlines the criteria for who can run for the presidency. And if you meet this criteria, you're disqualified. So then the criteria reads as follows: those who have been president on the term immediately previous cannot run. That wording is very tricky, even in English, immediately previous. Because that means that it was the last term, not this one. And Bukele is president on this term, not last one. All other Supreme Courts were interpreting to that wording to say immediately previous to be the current one and not the last one. So like right there, like that gives an opening. And so then they said like we can't actually strip this citizens' rights away from them, because technically, according to how the law is written, how the Constitution is written, there is an ambiguity here, and we can't actually take her citizens' rights away from her. And it actually opens the door for re-election. And so they weren't even ruling on whether Bukele could run again. They were ruling on the stripping of this person's constitutional rights. So, I mean, like, and I was like, man, are they that stupid? Like, just leave her alone. Who cares? And then they said, like, and plus there's, like, you know, you could argue that, like, there is, like, freedom of speech and expression, right? So, like, you know, are we gonna go like after everybody if they, you know, if they do that, right? So, I mean, if they have like a sign saying Bukele 2024 or whatever, like, it's ridiculous, right? I mean, you can't do that. So, so then this is where, you know, again, there's this area of ambiguity. And then they're saying like Bukele made it so that he could like run again, and it's like he hasn't even said that. Nobody, like, there's no official committee to, you know, promote re-election for him or whatever. So everything gets embellished, everything gets like augmented, and then the FUD gets pushed out there. And so then I was fighting with everybody saying like, well, basically you guys don't know what you're talking about, okay? So, like, stop LARPing about El Salvador. Like, look, you don't hear me talk about, like, the technical intricacies of lightning or tarot or fetiments, because I don't know jack about that, okay?
What do you mean? Like, listen, you can start a podcast and not know shit about anything. I know a couple of guys who did it.
Yeah, but, you know, but all of a sudden we have all these Salvadorian law experts, and it's like okay, and I'm not even an expert, but I mean, I took like several weekends, me and my dad, just studying. I contacted people, I asked people who are, like, I asked one of the authors of the Constitution about this, you know. And so I don't know, I think maybe I feel a little bit more confident about what I'm talking about. And I'm sorry, Alex Gladstein, you don't know. So, stop.
Can't the Constitution? Go ahead, the Constitution itself is recently created or updated. Can it not further be updated to get rid of a lot of these like, it's there, we know what's in there, but maybe we could change it so it's less, it's more clear. But the problem, I think that if they go ahead and do that, you're going to have a lot of resistance. But is there a clear path forward?
The other direction, right? It'll say now he's changing the Constitution, he's changing the laws, changing the.
Is there a clear path forward to clear up the Constitution and get maybe consensus amongst everybody in the Assembly or even amongst the citizens themselves to make the Constitution much more readable and you could understand it clearer?
Yeah, so there is no clear path forward because, in fact, there's clauses in there that allude to changing the aspects of the Constitution where about term limits and length of term are forbidden, and it's like it like shackles it, right? So you almost have to like do away with it entirely and like. But I'll tell you this much. I was talking to a friend of mine from El Salvador just recently, and I said, like, how are people feeling? And he said, like, look, man, people are loving this. They've been waiting for this for a long time. Like, this is what was promised to them. People can walk in the street without feeling like they're going to be jacked. Businesses are actually running and... without fear of getting, they call it rent, paying rent, right? Mm-hmm. Which is basically like shakedown money, right? So they would come and collect like the shakedown money. And so you know, people are supporting this. And then the other thing is that they're also don't care about any of this stuff in the Constitution. They're like, if there's a way, we'll elect them right now, right? Now, this is a slippery slope, though, because what if it was a bad guy? I don't know. Maybe he is. I have no idea. Evidence right now is like, if we look at the proof of work, he's doing some good stuff. As a Salvadorian, I can tell you that I agree with a lot of what's happening, right? So, but the slippery slope is like, if... you know, it was the other way around where, you know, it was like somebody like with maybe ill intent or wanted to hold a country hostage or whatever, you know, this is where it gets tough, right? And it's like, do we accept it when it's good and reject it when it's bad? And, you know, yeah, people are saying, yeah, they're what like, yep. Yeah.
Jaime, I don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy either. I know that there's a lot of people in America, Europe, you know, Canada. And so I think maybe why not there who hopped on the Bitcoin thing as a way to garner popular support during what was without a doubt a crazy hype cycle. I don't want to ask you what your line is, but like, what do you think the line of the Salvadorian people is for this sort of, you know, one after another, sort of generous interpretation of the law, legal loophole, slippery way to navigate an election ruling, et cetera, et cetera. Where do you think the line is for the people of El Salvador?
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. The day that, you know, the Bitcoin law got announced in Miami, guaranteed that like 99.9% of Salvadorans didn't know what that was all about. Like, you know, maybe like, you know, there's this guy that I know, he's a Bitcoiner in El Salvador. Him and his rich friends and Bitcoin enthusiasts who saw it as an investment opportunity, they were having meetups. You know, they knew what it was, you know, what was happening, right? But other than that, not many people. So I would just say this much for Bukele. It wasn't about popularity. It's about survival. The way that we here in Canada interpret Bitcoin is a store of value. You know, we want to be able to basically safeguard ourselves against you know, the debasing of our time, basically, you know, of our hard work. And so that's where we park our savings, right? In El Salvador, they don't have their own currency. You know, El Colón is their currency, which is no longer in circulation. So, but otherwise, they rely on the USD. In fact, El Salvador has to make purchases from the Fed of USD to circulate through its economy. There's a cost to that. Just like there's a cost to buy, you know, Bitcoin periodically for El Salvador. El Salvador did this not because it was trendy. Back in 2017, when Bukele was kicked out of his party that he originally ran for and was a successful mayor for two cities, the city where he lived in as well as the city where he was born, San Salvador, New Cuscatlan in San Salvador, and he did a lot of good things and people noticed and they encouraged him to run for the presidency. His old party said, no, it's not your turn. You gotta wait your turn. You gotta wait your turn. And you know what? You're not part of the in Spanish we call them los meros meros, right? The big chiefs, right? Or the big guys or the bosses, right? So they were looking for any way to keep him down, but the popularity he had, and because he's smart too, he was calling them out too, and he's like you guys, I'm not really all that proud to be associated with you right now. You're being hypocrites because you're supposed to be like this socialist party with a conscience, and you're doing anything but that. You become the new crooks, and so he got kicked out. And when he got kicked out, he began his New Ideas movement, which he said is like, listen, it's New Ideas, which means we take from the right, we take from the left. It doesn't matter if it's a good idea, we're going to implement it for El Salvador. And he got involved in the diaspora, people like me, in drafting the platform. Bitcoin City, for example, that concept came from it's called Plan Cuscatlan. Cuscatlan is the Nahuatl name of the Pipil people, pre-Columbian, pre-conquest of El Salvador, Cuscatlan. So that's the original name of El Salvador. And so the plan is called Plan Cuscatlan. So they didn't call for Bitcoin City, but it called for development in the area where Bitcoin City is and then the coastal areas, as well as underdeveloped areas, which is, you know, where the city's plan, as well as an airport and a train, high-speed train. And so then he began this sort of supporting this independent movement, new movement. And what happened was that he was being blocked. He was being blocked. There was all kinds of roadblocks, challenges, obstacles. And he eventually couldn't even run in his own party. Mm. And they were threatening to confiscate the funds that he had raised. And then in 2017, November of 2017, go on Bukele's timeline and search for Bitcoin back as early as you can see. He said two things. He retweeted the central bank, and the central bank said, like, we will regulate cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin to make sure that there's lawful activity, especially when it comes to election fundraising and spending. They've since deleted that tweet. Okay. And so you'll see there's a kind of like an embedded tweet that's like, it's gone, right? Mm-hmm. But what he said is like, when they're scared of a movement, they'll do anything to stop it. And then he, you know, and it's like, we'll use, it's official, something about Bitcoin. I can't remember what it was. And then like maybe like hours or maybe a day later, he tweeted again and he said, it's official. When we're victorious, we will use Bitcoin.
He's been there for a few years, has he?
He's been a Bitcoiner a lot longer than people think, right? Because this is not your average politician. This is not a man who, you know, I mean, I don't want to go into like the whole cult of personality. At the end of the day, he's a man, and especially Bitcoin does away with their heroes, right? Mm-hmm. But he's definitely operating at a level at least higher than Salvadoran politicians, which is not to compliment too much, because really they're idiots.
Low bar.
Yeah, but I mean, like, even our own Canadian politicians here, like, Bitcoin's not even in their radar at all. Like, you know, and when they do talk about something, it's about cryptocurrencies and blah blah. So you know, so he's been there a while. And so, like, when you know, to your original question, it hasn't been about popularity. It hasn't been about shilling or playing to a base or fundraising. I mean, that kind of started as fundraising. He said, like, we'll put our money into Bitcoin so it can't be confiscated, kind of thing. You know, but you know, it's been about survival. The fact that El Salvador does not have its own currency, and it's at the whim and mercy of, you know, the US and the world economic powers that control everything. And I would say, just kind of like to wrap it all up, there is this kind of like a really respected former politician. He's kind of like an elder statesman, you know, philosopher type guy, writer. His name is Dagoberto Gutierrez. Very well respected, and he was on a radio show not too often. And a lot of the media in El Salvador is not pro Bukele. They're like all against Bukele. And but just them, like, yeah, that's the people, like, they love him, right? So they ask him, "Hey Dago, you know, do you have Chivo?" He's like, "Oh no, it's not for me." It's like, "Well, I mean, you're a Bukele supporter. How come you don't have Chivo?" He's like, "That's not for me." He says, "I'm not the purpose for that move," he said. He said, "Well, I mean, but it's been a failure." He says, "Nobody's using it, you know, like, it's, you know, and we've spent so much money on this." And he says, "That's what you think? Okay. I mean, it's not for me. I'm old," he says, "like, but you have to think about something. The dollar, it's in its decline. Our economy is based on the dollar. This is game theory. Whether you think it's successful because people have adopted or not is inconsequential. It doesn't even matter. This is not the move. Success is not adoption. Success is that when the US dollar does not command the power it has today, El Salvador will have an exit strategy." Mm-hmm. It's about game theory. And I was like, wow. Like, I mean, you know, this guy's like 78, right? And he gets it at a level that, like, most prominent Bitcoiners, OGs, don't even understand. Because we're trapped right now. We're all trapped in high time preference. We want El Salvador to be a success less than a year into this. And so, I mean, I was like, whoa, when he said that, I was like, oh man, this is it. This is it. Like, that's the play. And if you don't get it, it's going to happen without you anyway.
In terms of success, there seems to be a level of success that's just being done regardless of Bitcoin or with Bitcoin, or if it's Bukele cleaning up stuff. Because I saw a tweet you posted not too long ago. You were talking about the GDP up to quite a bit in 2021, and exports are up, tourism is up. It just goes on and on. There's a whole bunch of things that you could just say they're just winning. But we want to be respectful of your time. And if you could just give us, or the people out there that are spreading FUD on the internet, Twitter, everywhere else, about what's going on in El Salvador, what would you tell them? What would you explain to them? How would you tell them, to give them some information to help them bridge the gap from between their fantasy and reality?
Go there. go there and see for yourself. Look, I mean, from Toronto, it's like a $500 flight direct every Wednesday, I think. Okay, so if you're Canadian and live in the Horseshoe, Golden Horseshoe. From Texas, it's, you can get $99 flights. Same from Miami, Florida. LA, I think you know, maybe like around $200 return. And once you get there, it's very affordable. Go there and see for yourself. And if you feel like it's a dictatorship, if you feel like there's no hope, if you feel like people are being oppressed, then by all means, come back, write about it, and tell everybody. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. I mean, this is a country that's in shambles, that is being rebuilt. But there's a lot of hope, and we have to sort of give it time. You know, there's still areas where gangs control most of the activity. We also have to continue to be critical of the Bukele government. Demand more. Its citizens have to demand more. And I'm not saying people should be like, oh, we won't say anything, but don't retweet El Faro's talking points. You know, don't retweet mainstream media's talking points. Go see and find out for yourself. Go look at the Twitter timeline of Bitcoiners that live there, that have been there for a while. Beyond Stacy and Max, of course, you know, like, they're big boosters, and I think that, like, for a lot of people, you know, they've lost credibility because they're so bullish on the country. I don't think they have, but you know, if you're you know, hypercritical of them, then go and, you know, follow other people that are there. There's a lot of them now. There's a lot of them. You know, I personally know three people who have bought property there. And who are investing in there, okay? Probably all in all, several millions of dollars, you know. I see, and I talked to my friend, and I asked, like, what's it like right now? It's like, people feel happy. Like, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, we don't have the money to make it to the end of the month. We don't have to fear for our lives, and know our rights aren't being oppressed. And you know what? No, I got tattoos all over my arms, and no, I'm not getting arrested. You know, because that's a part of the FUD, mm-hmm. is if you have tattoos, you're arbitrarily being detained. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, this particular friend of mine, he's a Bitcoiner. He's got a lot of tattoos, and is like, nobody's bothering me. But you know, like, you kind of know, like, when somebody has like tattoos and is a tattoo enthusiast versus like a gang member, right? So, and but yeah, I mean, you know, go there and experience it for yourself. You know, go for a week, go for a week, actually. Go for a week, and I guarantee you, you'll regret not booking for 2 weeks. So it's a beautiful country.
I'm a little disappointed that after all that talk of proof of work, when you said go there, you didn't once in that little 4-minute spiel about going to El Salvador say, don't trust Verify. Really, yes. A big letdown for me at the end of the a rock solid hour. A big letdown. A lot of low hanging fruit you left on.
We'll edit that in after, Joey.
I got, yeah. Well, that's why you're here. I got, yeah, for sure. No, it's good. It's good. Don't trust Verify. That's for sure.
Hi, Jaime. Before you go, tell people where they can find your Twitter feed, your beef with multiple media outlets, Blue Check, Twitterati. Different nonprofit foundations, all that good stuff. And yeah. If you're working on something, I know you're still doing the Bitcoin Festival or involved in that, I think, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Give that a plug too.
Yeah. So, like, you know, and I published my Bitcoin manifesto in Twitter, and you can find me at Jaime W. Garcia, at Jaime W. Garcia on Twitter. And you can check out all my stuff. It's mainly rants. Look, I mean, for me, this is a hobby. I'm just a regular schmo. I got a regular fiat job. I go there. every morning. I'll be a maxi here, like in a way that I know how to be a maxi. I'm not jeopardizing my day job to do this in APIN all in, right? I still have to have the ability to book my trip and vacation to El Salvador and stack a little bit of sats, right? But definitely I have fun with it. I do host once a month Global Bitcoin Fest. I usually focus on Latin America and El Salvador, and it's fun for me. I do it as a hobby. My wife gets annoyed at me sometimes because it's like, oh, come on, what?
That's back how you know you're doing something soccer. Right. If your wife's annoyed, that's the story of all Bitcoin.
She's supportive. It's just that she thinks it's my latest tangent, right? So. But that's the thing is, like, I started writing a book on Bitcoin in El Salvador, and I thought I'd have it done by September, and I'm realizing that, like, oh my God, like, writing a book is more about reading and researching than actually writing. And so if I get it done, I get it done. and I don't think I can quite write it without going there one more time. And so I'm going to be going there soon and just soaking it all in before I put the final touches on it. But, I'm not going to shill the book. It's just, release it quietly. If people notice it, fine. I mean, I still...
Fuck that. You're not going to shill the book. You're coming on. The day that book is released, you're coming back on. That's a for sure thing. Absolutely.
It'll be mostly some of the stuff that I talked about. It's just all in one. In one place where you can get it all, right? So, just having fun with it. That's me, like just not shilling any projects. It's just having fun with it. This is me, and I love you guys' show, by the way. You know what? Whenever I can, I tune in, watch it, or watch it on replay. So, keep doing your thing, guys.
I like your common sense approach to Bitcoin maximalism. It's actually pretty good. So it's rather refreshing. So keep that up too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Hi, mate. Thanks for your time, brother. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you. If you're catching us on audio, thank you too. We'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Cheers, guys. Bye.
Take care.